everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Weekend Review Show, and these are some of the things that we're about to be talking about.
People inside Ukraine and people outside Ukraine started asking questions about whether this was a good deal, and it was at that point that it fell apart.
They're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats.
You talk about extreme.
Comments from Victoria Nuland and former President Donald Trump top our list of stories in this Weekend Review. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. Let's do this. Okay, so here we go. We are now less than 2 months from knowing who the next president of the United States is going to be. And each week, the situation becomes more and more critical. Joining me now to go through this week's events are the hosts of the Critical Hour on Sputnik Radio, Dr. Wilmer Leon and Garland Nixon. Gentlemen, thank you for abiding by the CC memo, the coatless and casual day memo. Let's get to it. So, look. No matter who you were pulling for, no matter who you think won the debate, there is no denying that Kamala Harris and her team seem to have come up with some kind of plan to bait Donald Trump, right? To bait him. And most observers on both sides of the aisle are saying it worked.
Kamala Harris, let's have a good debate.
Nice to see you. Have fun.
Thank you.
They have, and she has, destroyed our country.
This is someone who has openly said he would terminate, I'm quoting, terminate the Constitution of the United States.
I want to get the war settled. I know Zelensky very well, and I know Putin very well. I have a good relationship, and they respect your president. She's a Marxist. Everybody knows she's a Marxist. Her father's a Marxist professor in economics. And he taught her well.
So essentially, we wanted to show you a little bit of everything as they discussed the topics of the day there. And look, neither one of them were specific about their plans, but there was a tendency, and it seemed to me, and I want your reaction, clear that she was coached to stick in every one of her comments something that she knew he would not be able to resist. And therefore reveal himself in some way that they had planned on him revealing himself. Did I explain that correct? And get us started there, Wilmer.
Yeah, I think you did explain it quite well. They did their homework. One of the things that has been said about former President Trump is he's been in more debates than any other president or. Yeah. Individual in that position. And so they watched the video, and the first thing that happened, she stepped across the stage and went right to him. She, as they say, she stepped to him and got in his chest. And someone with that type of personality does not look favorably upon those types of aggressive action
from a woman.
So no,
from a woman,
from a woman,
yeah,
and from a woman of color. I mean, they pushed his buttons, and he never was able to pivot out of that, having his button pushed, to really taking control of the circumstance.
But I, you know what I thought, and I told this to my wife as I was watching this. I thought that at the very beginning, if somebody had told him, you need to be more disciplined, you need to stick to the issues, and you need to talk about your stuff, not hers, I thought he was doing very well with that. I thought the first half hour of the debate, I looked at my wife and I said, I think he's winning this thing. Something happened about the midpoint where we started seeing angry Donald Trump appear. I saw the sweat coming down, you know, the sides of his nostrils. And then I looked at my wife and I said, you know, Garland, something's changed here. I don't know what it is. She's getting under his skin. Did you see that too?
Yeah, but I think it was kind of this was kind of a WWF, Wrestling Federation, Worldwide Wrestling Federation kind of thing, where the discussion afterwards is getting under people's skin, who was angry and who wasn't. And I think Donald Trump, as they say in football, left a lot of points on the field, you know, the issues. He did hit the issues which were that people are voting on, which is going to be foreign policy to some extent, in that the money that's going to foreign policy is affecting domestic policy, and of course the issue of prices and inflation. So I think he did, you know, score a couple of touchdowns on the issues that are important. He left a lot of stuff on the table, mainly because he harped on immigration far longer than he should. Nothing wrong with him hitting immigration, but he took it too far, and he should have really, what he did with immigration, if he'd have done that with inflation, it would have been much more effective.
But
I don't think it really hurt him that bad. I don't think this is going to move the needles.
You know what I think his best moment was? The closing argument. That's when somehow he thought, oh, my God, I was supposed to hit this, this, and this. Let me get it out there now. That's when he turned to her and said, look, you've been in office for 3.5 years. Why didn't you get any of this stuff done that you've been talking about? He should have made that his main point and drilled that throughout the entire thing. Instead, most people didn't hear it because most people were asleep on the East Coast because it was almost past midnight already. At least I wanted to go to sleep. Unfortunately, I couldn't because I get paid to do this.
Well, Rick.
Go ahead.
When the first question that was asked.
Yeah.
Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? She wasn't able to command data. She couldn't talk about the jobs report.
No.
She couldn't talk about interest rates.
No.
And like you, I sent a message to a buddy of mine saying on that first question, it's over, she's done, she's lost. Because she demonstrated no command of the subject matter. But what happened, the conversation shifted to more of a narrative, conversational, visceral discussion about abortion, about immigration. Anybody could have had those conversations because she wasn't talking data, policy, and specific points.
And because you're right, and because of that, that's where he fell into the trap.
Played into her wheelhouse.
Exactly. Of turning the whole thing into another one of his rallies with all the people who come to see him who already we know are going to vote for him and not thinking, I need to be talking in more broad terms. This is why he got hurt. In fact, look, we live in an era where it's not about the totality of the moment. In fact, relatively few people will have watched this entire debate. Relatively speaking, it'll be a very, very small number of people, but almost the entire world we'll see the clips. And that is why the Haitians eat cats comment that from Mr. Trump, I think, is going to be very damaging for him. Not only is the clip being played everywhere, so are the memes, and so is this reaction that was recorded in real time.
Talk about it because they're so embarrassed by it. In Springfield, they're eating the dogs.
Those are real people watching the debate, laughing when they heard him say that. And I'll, you know, just to admit, my wife was sitting next to me when we were watching the debate together. She laughed when she heard that as well, because she thought it was, I mean, I'm sorry, it was just a ridiculous thing for a guy who wants to be president to say. I mean, and then when he's asked about it, he says, "Well, but I saw somebody say it on TV." Come on, man. I mean,
but I don't think it hurts Donald Trump for this reason. The reason why are people voting for Donald Trump? It doesn't have to do with Donald Trump, you know, being some cool, calm, and reasonable, brilliant philosopher. You know what I mean? People expect that stuff from Donald Trump. The people that are going to support Donald Trump have long since given up, you know, any thoughts that he's going to be your average person. I think that.
But what about the undecideds? But what about the undecideds, Garland? There's still a group of. I know it's weird for people like you and me and the good doctor here. But there are people out there, believe it or not, who aren't even watching this crap. They're only going to see the TikTok tapes.
On this point, it's not a matter of how much it helped or hurt him. It helped her. And because she's the one that has to pull in the undecideds. She's the one that has to pull in the dual haters. She's the one that has to bring more to her camp. Because he's already decided he's not expanding the electorate. But she has to expand the electorate.
But how about, Garland, we both interrupted you. So you were going to make your point about the fact that you don't think it's going to hurt him as much as most people are saying. Make your point on that, please.
Because I just think you have to look at the reasons that people are voting for Donald Trump. And I think this particular election, a lot of it doesn't have to do with Donald Trump. I think a lot of people are voting for Donald Trump for two of the things that he said. One, inflation. The other, when he said, you know, we're close to World War II, I think people are concerned with foreign policy. Mm-hmm. They're concerned with that. And as Malcolm X said, any place is better than here. And I think there's people that are looking at the current administration saying any place is better for here. They'd vote for, a wrinkly old plum if they could to get out from under what they see as a disastrous four years with the Biden.
So, but you didn't address the question that Wilmer and I were talking about. There are as many as 7% of the people who are undecided. Do you not think they don't watch the news like we do. They probably didn't even watch a debate, but they'll see that TikTok video. Do you think they'll be moved?
I don't think that kind of thing will make a decision. You know, I remember watching George W. Bush in like 2004, and both of us, he was a horrible debater. He was one of the worst I've ever seen. And he won, because ultimately in the end, I don't think these debates rarely move the numbers. Rarely.
Fair point. And to your point, they said Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump two or three times, and he still beat her on Election Day. So there's a point to be made that maybe these debates are somewhat overblown because they are media events. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about Ukraine, and we're going to talk about the peace deal that wasn't. Because, boy, is there a breakthrough in that this week. We finally had somebody just say what everybody knew, and she's big. You know her. You'll hear from her. We'll be right back. I'm Rick Sanchez, and the gang's all back. Wilmer, Garland, Rick, yep, we are quite a threesome, and we are going to be bringing you the Week in Review. In fact, we're halfway through it. We talked about the politics. Now let's go to the geopolitics, and this is about Ukraine. And it sounds like Ukraine is about to be checkmated, right? If this were a chessboard, it's like, uh-oh. I mean, he's staring down at my queen, right? And if that's the case, then what's the next move, right? I mean, the Russians are moving into that area. Watch this. Let's look at this. This is the next move. The Guardian is now reporting that the UK has already given permission and the US is about to do the same for Ukraine to fire French and British-made cruise missiles into Russia. Unfortunately, the people of the United States know nothing about this because our media does not report such things. You would expect something like this would involve some kind of congressional, if not national, referendum from the people. After all, we're talking about bombing Russia. Or some would say, and this is where I want you guys to come in, is this real? Are we really considering doing this? And we're going to let Biden just make a decision one day? Or is this all a bluff because it's needed for negotiating leverage? Because right now, the West and Ukraine have almost no negotiating leverage left as a result of what's going on in the Kursk region. Garland, I'll let you start.
You know, I think you're looking for a rational reason, and the neocons are not rational. They just continue to escalate. They don't know. They don't have a plan. Their original plan was to collapse Russia with sanctions. When that didn't work, they've been just effectively putting out fires. And I don't mean putting out fires in Ukraine. I mean putting out fires here. I would argue this is most likely related to the U.S. election. They want to look tough and strong, and they're moving because things aren't looking well for them. So, it's not rational. It's not a plan, and it's extremely dangerous.
Could you imagine? I'm just thinking, Wilmer, the three of us, let's take ourselves back 20 years. And we learned, or there was a New York Times headline saying, U.S. considers bombing Russia, using cruise missiles in Russia. Wouldn't that have been a big story? Wouldn't that have been like 24-hour news coverage? What the hell, man? Where is the story?
20 years ago, it probably would have been a Republican. It would have been a Bush administration that was talking about launching missiles into Russia. Now it's a Democratic administration that is more hawkish than the Republicans. The other thing, this isn't as simple as sending missiles into Russia. Who's providing the coordinates for the missiles? Yeah. Who's going to launch the missiles? That means the United States is now even more directly involved in this conflict than originally thought. So now if Russia decides they want to take their pound of flesh from us.
Well, here's what's interesting.
We are now giving them one more reason to do so.
Here's what's interesting about this case. One way or another, the truth always comes out, right? And what you were just talking about was highlighted this week. Here it is. Victoria Nuland has just come out and made a blockbuster confession. Nuland, as in case some of our viewers don't know, was the Undersecretary of State in charge of all things Ukraine, and she's earned a reputation as being among the most pro-war, hawkish neocons in the entire U.S. government. She's now admitted that, yes, it's true. About a year and a half ago and about 100,000 dead Ukrainians ago, she and others killed a peace deal that would have ended the war in Ukraine, and here she is admitting it.
The Ukrainians began asking for advice on where this thing was going. And it became clear to us, clear to the Brits, clear to others, that Putin's main condition was buried in an annex to this document that they were working on. Mm-hmm. And it included limits on the precise kinds of weapons systems that Ukraine could have after the deal. And there were no similar constraints on Russia. Russia wasn't required to pull back. Russia wasn't required to have a buffer zone from the Ukrainian border, wasn't required to have the same constraints on its military facing Ukraine. And so people inside Ukraine and people outside Ukraine started asking questions about whether this was a good deal.
Mostly, of course, people outside Ukraine. and it's spoken like a true military contractor. Well, if we had signed this, we wouldn't be able to sell enough stuff to Ukraine. I mean, you know, we wouldn't have been able to give them more, you know, military hardware. Remarkable to watch this, for me anyway, but so revealing. But wait, there's more. Here's a second confirmation that there was a deal that was killed by the Brits and the United States. It comes from one of the Ukrainian diplomats who actually agreed to the deal. He was so happy. He says they actually were getting ready to pop a bottle of champagne to celebrate it.
Came back with the negotiating party.
Yes, completely. Yes, it was successful. We opened the champagne bottle, you know, for this because
it
was...
You actually opened a bottle of champagne in this.
Yes, time. Because it was completely successful negotiations.
This is. I don't know. Garland, take it away, man.
Well, this certainly undermines the Kamala Harris's recent argument, and of course the Biden administration's continuous argument that Ukraine is an independent and sovereign nation, a democratic nation, and that we are. No, if they were independent and sovereign, they wouldn't have to ask permission. And once they celebrated a decision that was made by Ukrainian diplomats, it would have held. But because Victoria Nuland was part of a cabal that overthrew Ukraine and inserted a puppet regime, it was the U.S. imperialists, the Brits, etc., that made the decision for Ukraine. It's simply, they make it clear, no, Ukraine was not allowed to make that decision because there's no such thing as Ukraine. It is a political and military tool of the U.S. neocons and nothing more.
I'm surprised she's so unabashedly admitted to all of this. I've got to be thinking that there's some people over in the State Department who watch this and their jaws dropped and saying, why the hell is she saying this? Why is she giving up the game like this, Wilmer? I mean, what do you think?
Well, it just shows the arrogance of her position. And she doesn't think that there's anything wrong with saying this, A, because it's true, and B, because as far as she's concerned, it's her show. Garland's absolutely right. This has always been a proxy war. Huh. Ukraine, in this context, was never a democracy. The United States overthrew that democracy in 2014. She was instrumental in doing that. When she talks about there were people in Ukraine and outside of Ukraine that were opposed to this, well, who were those people?
Yeah,
they weren't. They weren't the Ukrainians being press ganged into service on the front line, and so this demonstrates. First of all, one other point, really quickly.
Please.
This conflict didn't start in February of 22. It started when the United States started putting missiles on the border of countries that are bordering Russia.
Yeah.
And just the same way people want to say October 7th started a conflict in Gaza. No, that started in 1947.
Right.
It's a very limited perspective of history.
No, it's a fascinating. I think that was one of the most fascinating stories that we covered all this week. And it's interesting that there's us, and then there's a few other networks, and maybe a couple of people who are independent journalists. And other than that, nobody will ever know about it. And that's sad. By the way, sad as it may sound, many of the people who work for us in this country, either elected or appointed, are incentivized to encourage wars that most of us don't want. Right. But those people are extremely powerful, and they often have interlocking interests where they serve more than one master. There's obviously no better example of this anywhere than Dick Cheney. He's literally the leading figure in the military-industrial complex who then went on to become the president of the United States. Oh, that's right. Sorry, vice president. Wink. And then he sold us on a war mostly through untruths. I mean, this guy is the neocon's neocon. And that is why I find this next clip that I'm going to share with you so fascinating. Here's some Chinese leader, interesting man, lecturing the former vice president. He tells him essentially, you guys, you, Mr. Vice President, are now doing to others what the British once did to you. And then he asks him, have you learned nothing from your own history's experiences? Go.
When you became the number one economy, the number one military power, you became a student, a learner of your former, well, boss, the British. You want to bully others. In 1900, you joined the other Western imperialists to invade China. In the 1950s, America took the lead to invade the Korean Peninsula. And you made a lot of trouble in the Middle East and around the Arab world. You tried to sow discord among peace-loving countries, and you didn't keep your promise. Talking about U.S.-China relations, I was quite happy to thank you for you to give me the chance. Remember, sir?
Remember, sir? Yeah, and he's a little old guy, and he speaks with a broken English accent, obviously. But there's something about him sitting there as almost an act of defiance saying, look at yourself, dude. And Cheney slumped over in the chair. Just, I don't know. There was something about that moment that I thought was worth sharing. Guys, please. Garland, you start.
I'll tell you what was really powerful about that moment. I was looking at the people in the audience. One of the Arab gentlemen had a big grin on his face. He was just sitting there smiling like he was watching his favorite movie, right? But that's important because that's the global South. The people who have been oppressed by the British, oppressed by the U.S., who just want to be left alone, who watched Hollywood movies for years and said, wow, the U.S., you know, that doesn't look bad. I'd kind of like to be like that, and they got stomped into the ground. So the important thing we see there is that there are people all over the world saying, yeah, you know, you guys were in a position to be very, very powerful, and you took advantage of it to oppress others and overthrow other governments at all. And I'm glad that there's someone in the world finally powerful enough to stand there to your face and to tell you that you've done wrong. And we all out here in the Global South agree.
Yeah, that guy is kind of the personification of the Global South, and maybe more specifically, the personification of China, which is about to take over as the number one leader economically, anyway, in the world, a position once held by the United States. To that point, Wilmer, you say what?
I say, Rick, sir. The neocon's neocon is now endorsing Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
That is not
great point.
A confirmation of her. Mm-hmm. What it demonstrates is she attacked Donald Trump in her speech from the right. not from the left.
Yeah.
It's not that Dick Cheney is moving to her position. It's not that the neocons are moving to her position. It's a validation that she and the Democrats are moving to theirs.
Hmm. That's a great point. That's a great point. It's such a great point. We're going to just, yeah, you finally got one right. Kidding.
I hang out with Garland. It's not happening.
I hear that from my kids all the time. Dad, you finally got it right. Great conversation, guys. It's an important conversation. I'm so glad that millions of people get to hear us each week, have these discussions, because I think I only wish we could grow that more in the United States, where some of our fellow compatriots could understand some of the things that are taking place that we should just, you know, understand to be responsible for and be responsible for the actions of our leaders. But it is what it is. That's our show. Remember, always look outside your own box and don't live in one box. By golly, I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.